to For the Love of Weather podcast. This is the podcast where we discuss the Earth's atmosphere and how we're all connected through the weather and climate. We are bringing you a very special episode today, all the way from the Blue Earth Summit in Woolwich. We've had some really interesting conversations and we have learned a lot. And we just hope that you enjoy this episode of just some mini episodes that we put together while we've been here. So we haven't done anything really on sailing before, have we, Gemma?
No.
But we have a sailing expert here. So please, can you introduce yourself? Tell us what it is that you do.
My name is Nicole Vettervelden, and I'm a professional sailor. I'm part of the Spanish SailGP team, as well as I come from an Olympic sailing background, and yeah, now growing into professional sailing as well.
So in your lifetime, you will have seen a massive shift in gender within sailing. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think it's something that has evolved quite quickly and quite recent. Until now, sailing was kind of limited for us as female athletes to Olympic sailing. There was a big pathway and you could really grow up thinking of going to the games and winning an Olympic medal. But after that, professional sailing wasn't really an option. And it is becoming an option now, and that pathway is really starting to open up, which is really exciting for us at this moment, but also exciting to see to what can come for the kids that come behind us, you know, and especially little girls, that they can see women in the sport of sailing and in professional sailing, and see that that is a path you can go towards if you really want. So yeah, SailGP started with the Women Pathway Program, which is kind of where I started my professional sailing path, and now we're every boat has a female athlete on board, and now there's going to be the first female driver next season, which is super cool to see. So there's been a Women's America's Cup now, the first ever Women's America's Cup. There's been women in the ocean race, so it's really cool to see how it's evolving and how that ball started rolling through SailGP just about 3 years ago. So yeah, it's exciting, I think.
For anyone that doesn't know what SailGP is, can you explain a bit about what's involved?
So SailGP is kind of creating the Formula One on the water. So it's fast, it's dynamic, it's close racing. So it's 10, now 11, possibly 12 foiling catamarans sailing in around the world in different venues. It's close racing, 12 countries fighting for a trophy at the end of the year. But at the same time, we also have the Impact League, which is, so we've got two parallel trophies. One is the racing on the water that activates us as athletes, but then we also have the race for a better planet, for inclusivity, diversity, gender equity, but as well reducing our carbon footprint, really working on reducing plastic pollution. So it's quite cool because it's not only the racing on the water, but we also have that sustainability aspect to it, which I think, especially for me as an athlete, it's really exciting to see that we're also contributing something else to the planet.
Can you give us an example of some of the sustainability that's going into sailing?
So there's a lot to be said, but I think, like in SailGP, how it works, we now have four focus areas, which are women in sports, then there's inclusion, diversity, then there's reducing our carbon footprints, and then there's plastic waste. And so each team tries to work around these four focus areas throughout the season and create different projects around this project. So one of the interesting things are, especially on carbon footprint, we really try to go towards being net zero and really contributing back to everything that we as a league are producing. So that is something quite big, that as a league, we're getting all the data and really understanding, okay, what are we as a league contributing in a carbon footprint point of view, and how can we then give that back, or how can we reduce that to really be net zero and not be contributing to more carbon pollution in the world.
I feel like we can't have you here and not ask you, how does the weather play a role in sailing? Obviously there's the obvious one about the wind, but what role does weather play in sailing?
Yeah, weather is a huge thing. I think it's the most special thing about sailing, for sure. It's so diverse. No day is the same. Every day is different and every place is different. So you really need to be ready for anything. And I think it also gives you a lot of respect that the weather can be anything. Anything can happen. You can never kind of, I don't know how to explain, but you can never just, like tune out of it or think like, oh, the weather's great today, everything's going to be fine. You kind of always need to be ready for anything. So yeah, I think it's amazing because it gives you a connection kind of to nature and to the world and the understanding of the weather. And yeah, I think it's, for me, it's the most beautiful thing of sailing, that connection to the elements and that everything's changed in constant change.
What's the one thing that you wish everybody knew about sailing?
I think the one thing, the most interesting part for me of SailGP is how the league has split into two trophies. So there's the trophy on the water, which is what SailGP is, the racing between the boats and everything. But then there's also the Race for the Planet, which is the Impact League, and where we're all trying to contribute to a better planet in many different ways. So yeah, for me, that's the most exciting thing about SailGP.
Thank you so much for talking to us today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So we're here with another little mini podcast. We're with Gemma. Gemma, can you introduce yourself? Tell us what it is you do.
Hi, my name's Gemma, and I am, well, actually, as of 2 weeks ago, I'm a PhD student. So I have just started studying at Nottingham Trent University, and my passion really is to understand whether the growing second-hand fashion market can be a lever that decarbonises the mainstream fashion industry.
So you've got a stand here, and I did it yesterday, and you asked us all to value what we thought the items were valued at. And I thought it was really interesting as well, because it was more about asking people how they value things. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, I just, before I started doing the PhD, I did an MA at London College of Fashion, and I was researching secondhand fashion, because that's the thing that I really care about. And what I discovered was that values in the secondhand market, they're really subjective and they're really super inconsistent. So they're all different places. And I wanted to do a kind of experiment to understand how people value clothes. And value is such a subjective kind of term, isn't it? You know, the value of things, the price of things, what you'd pay for things. So I asked people to value my wardrobe, pieces from my wardrobe. And I did three experiments. I did an experiment where I told stories about the clothes. I did an experiment where I just showed them clothes and I didn't tell them any stories at all. And then I have an Instagram feed called The Elephant in My Wardrobe. And so I asked the people who follow me there to value my clothes. And yeah, I think it's interesting on lots of levels. I mean, for sure, if you tell people a story and if they can see clothes and they can touch and feel them and try them on, they'll pay more money for them. But also what people talked to me about the process was how it made them think about how they felt about clothes and how they valued them.
I think I really found that yesterday. So when I was going through it, I was reading the story. And then afterwards, I was like, I have to actually remember to look at the item as well. And then when you looked at it, I was like, actually, looking at the item then did change the way I valued it. So I think it's really interesting what you were saying, that it plays a role as well if you can actually see the items.
Well, I think we're online selling to a degree, we're all quite nervous of online selling, aren't we? You know, I think maybe all of us have bought something online and, it wasn't quite what you thought it was going to be. It doesn't fit you, the colour's not right. So you're much more cautious, I think, when you buy online. And then also, I think, in a way, online turns things into commodities. You know, it just arrives in a box. It's a little bit like getting a takeaway coffee and you don't have a sort of emotional attachment to it in the same way that maybe you do if you see it, you touch it, you think about it, you engage with it, you hear the story behind it, then maybe you feel differently about the thing you buy. And there is some really interesting research from, I think it's RAP, that says if you buy, because my passion is secondhand clothes, if you buy secondhand clothes, you keep them for longer than you keep if you buy new clothes. And I wonder if that's about the process of shopping secondhand again, because it's not quite as easy. So you maybe have to hunt a little bit harder to find something. You are finding something that is unique in the second-hand market because everything's sort of a one-off. So I wonder if that also increases your emotional attachment.
It's really fascinating. Actually, it's a really good point as well. You do have to look harder for it. You have to think harder. You have to look at the pictures harder as well to know whether that's actually going to work for you. So I buy on Vinted all the time. So I sort of made a very conscious decision to buy secondhand all the time. I do struggle with shoes, although these trainers are second. though they were brand new out of the box, all vintage. But anyway, it's just really interesting what you say about the value on it, because all my vintage clothes, I wear them all the time.
Yeah.
My stuff that I would have bought like a few years ago are still sitting in my wardrobe. Fascinating.
I think it's really interesting. I was talking to somebody as well, because I started the Instagram feed, really, a lot of it was about sort of trying to reduce my own personal consumption and sort of understand my impact and the impact of my wardrobe. And I think shopping secondhand, it sort of slows you down, because you can't always find exactly what you want. I mean, I know there are 73 million Zara items on Vinted, and if you want something from Zara, I mean, definitely look there first, because you probably will find it. But I think the fact that you have to wait a little while, and maybe you have to search for something for a little while, that's good, because it kind of slows you down and it takes you out of this one-click shopping loop that we're all kind of sucked into. And then again, I think, like you say, you feel better about the thing you bought.
I also feel as well, like, I've had these, like, random conversations with complete strangers that I bought the clothes off. So, like, maybe you get a message and they say, I'm really sorry, my kid is sick, can I send it tomorrow? And I'm like, yes, of course you can. But there is actually this other human connection that you get from these little messages. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you could buy a couple of things and then you don't really have any back and forth. But sometimes you do. These really lovely little moments of humanity of this maybe mum or somebody who's just trying to sell on their clothes, maybe make a few quid, something like that, you know.
Well, I think the other thing that's really interesting is there's a whole narrative that says, you know, secondhand clothing is a very commercial operation, and it is, you know, vintage is a huge business. But there's also like other ways that you can consume secondhand clothing. So there's a lady that I really admire, Zoe Sussmeyer, and she runs a thing called the Big Swap Events in Nottingham and in the East Midlands. And she's very much about size inclusivity in the secondhand market, because size, the secondhand market can be very inaccessible if you're not a certain size. But what's lovely about if you go to a swap, is I've done this, you take your clothes to a swap, you actually see who takes your clothes away, and you can meet the person whose clothes you're taking. And I don't know about you, but there are clothes that I'm quite emotionally attached to. And so sometimes selling those is quite hard. You know, you don't necessarily want, you want, but if you can swap them with somebody and you think, well, that's really nice. You know, like I met this lady, she took my top away. And I think Toast do something similar. Toast have a swap rail in their store. And if you want to swap your Toast clothes in a Toast store, you fill out a card. And you say, you know, hi, I'm Gemma. I wore this dress to a wedding. It doesn't fit me anymore. That's why I'm swapping it. And then the next person kind of gets not just your dress, but the story. And again, to me, there's something really interesting about how you create that emotional connection with the clothes.
Yeah, it's the human element. It makes you care. It makes you care. And if you care, then you do something about it, which is why, you know, we continue to shop secondhand. What was your main motivation for starting all of this? You mentioned about wanting to understand where all of your, you know, what was your impact? But, I mean,
for me,
you've gone on to do a PhD, so you really care. Where was that moment where you thought, I'm going to do it?
Mahusive climate anxiety. You know, the World Wildlife Fund published that data, I think, around about 2018, and they said 69% of wildlife population decline. And you can feel that, you know, in my lifetime, because basically that's kind of my lifetime, I can feel that the wildlife populations are different. You know, there are less insects than when I was a child. There are less birds in my garden than there were 14 years ago when we moved in. So I can feel that, and I think there was a moment for me when, and at the same time, I've worked in the fashion industry for a really long time. You know, when I graduated from college, we made clothes in the UK. People like us made most of our clothes. So I've seen the fashion industry go through this massive change and this massive growth curve. And, you know, then you say, okay, and in that same time, wildlife populations have declined enormously. And to me, that, you know, fashion's the thing that I've spent my whole life thinking about. There's a link. There is a connection in the resource use involved in making clothes and the environmental degradation of the planet. And so once you know that, it was like, I can't keep going to work every day and saying buy some new stuff, because that's disingenuous. And I'm lucky I've got a very understanding husband who's also pursuing a passion project. And so we've decided to live a different life.
I think I'm definitely going to look at things differently now. When I do Vinted, I think I'm going to add a story about my item and actually share with people. why they should buy my item.
I mean, if you can and you're on Instagram, will you follow me and will you let me know how that goes, Gemma?
Yeah.
Because I would like to tell that story on the elephant in my wardrobe, because I think maybe we could be like a bit of a community for change around that.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think what you were saying, I think it really resonated. Like actually saying to people, this is the, rather than saying, oh, it's in good quality, it's this size, yeah, it's got the yeah. tags, actually say to them, oh, I wore this to this event, it really means a lot to me, yeah. and actually see how it goes. So I'll definitely let you know.
Yeah.
But we always like to ask everyone, what's the one thing you wish everybody knew about what you do? So about sustainable fashion.
Oh, that's such a big question, isn't it? It's not one thing. I think the one thing I wish everybody knew about sustainable fashion is there's no silver bullet here. There's no like one, actually I don't think there is one thing you can do, but what I would say is become a more conscious and a more curious consumer. I think ask questions. I don't, that's not a, sort of new, is it? But you know, like, don't just take everything at face value. Don't just click as the bag. Ask yourself some questions about what you, you know, do you need it? Do you want it? Do you love it? What's it made of? How do you feel about the brand? Are you going to wear it? You know, ask yourself some questions and think twice.
It's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing everything with us.
Thank you so much.
So, Coco, tell us about everything that you do. Tell me everything about yourself. Introduce yourself. Give me your full name, job title. Tell me what you do.
Cool. So my name is Coco. I am the marketing manager here at Riskin. So Riskin is technically a business. A bit, how do I explain that? It's a bit complicated, so I'm going to try to keep it like short, sweet, and understandable. But basically, we work within circular fashion, and we are here to help brands, mostly clothing brands, to become more circular. So the aim of the company is to keep clothes in circulation for as long as possible. So the way we work with brands is that we put in place what we call a take back program, where customers can send back their old clothes in exchange for a voucher to spend with the brand. So we are enticing people of doing the right thing. And anything that we receive then in our warehouse based in Cannington, East London, is then either just like graded in different sections, either reused, like just like hand sorted and then just sent for resale. So we have a platform where we resell all the secondhand clothes. So we're technically like a pre-loved marketplace. Or it's reused. So we work with like fashion designers, they need like fit stock. So we just like provide them with fit stock. So as you call it, so upcycling. Or the last resort is recycling. So we have an in-house recycling facility. So we are basically a 360 solution for brands and guaranteeing that no clothes will end up in landfill.
So you mentioned a lot of things there.
Yeah, it's quite complicated.
Where did this all start? Where did this come from? Where you thought I'm gonna do something? Where's your, what's your motivation? And tell us how that went from A to where you are now.
Yeah. So it's actually interesting. Riskin was founded during COVID. So I wasn't there at the time. Obviously, I just joined just after COVID when they actually started the company. But for me, I think on a personal level, I worked for a Cornish company called Finisterre, like for 5 years. And this is when I ended up being like fashion and sustainability. And I was just so passionate and like set a massive advocate of what the brand is doing. And I was like, this is amazing. There is so much stuff that needs to be done. And the way Finisterre is really good at like, you know, reusing what's already available to make clothes. So, you know, like they reuse like plastic in their clothes and things like that. So I was like, this is so interesting. So I was like, okay, I do want to explore that a bit more and like work within the fashion and sustainability environment. And this is when I came across Riskin and I was like, perfect. And funnily enough, Finisterre is now my account. So I'm managing Finisterre as a brand partner. And it's so great because I am actually working behind the scene of like, always wondered when I worked in like different fashion brands, what would happen with like customer return, faulty, dead stock. You know, all these things that brands don't know what to do with. And this is where Riskin come here in place as a solution. And it's so interesting to like, from different perspectives, to see how we can help brands to become more circular by raising this awareness, as well as raising awareness with the consumer themselves and being like, as just Gemma said, just buy pre-loved over new. Like if you can, just go for something that's already available, as opposed to like, you know, buy something new that needs like resources to be created, which then have an impact on the environment.
So you've spoken about clothes. I'm so curious about our little chat about shoes. Tell me about shoes.
So shoes, I mean, I think you're talking about shoes and recycling. Shoes are like a really hard, we know like within the recycling industry, and once again, I am not the best person to speak to, you should speak to Ross, our co-founder. He's the one that's holding textile recycling, and he's so knowledgeable, he's so amazing. One of the things I've known from him is that shoes are extremely hard to recycle because they have different components, whether it's like rubber, leather, glue, you know, like zips and metal things and, you know, eyelid and all of that, and makes it extremely complicated to be deconstructed to then be recycled. So one thing everyone should know is like never put your shoes in the bin, because if they end up in the landfill, which they will, they won't never biodegrade, because most of the shoes these days are made out of plastic, and plastic is not biodegradable unless you've got a shoe that's literally made out of like 100% leather, which is not seen these days. It will take like thousands of years to actually like biodegrade in the environment. So I always try to say to people, just like never put anything in the bin to start with. Just be on the lookout for any textile recyclers. There is a few things. Any donation bank within the UK should work with a textile recycler. So if you don't know where to go, it's better to put it for donation in a bank, in a closing bank, because someone will work with a local textile recycler. If you actually do want to go straight away to a textile recycler, there is a website called TerraCycle where you can put your postcode and it will tell you where is your local textile recycler. But never put anything in the bin. And then otherwise, you can come to Reskin, look at all our lovely brand partners, take back. And then you can just send back any clothes in any state or any shoes, and then just send it to us, and then we'll do the right thing with it, just like making sure it doesn't end up in landfill.
So you've mentioned how things end up in landfill, and before we started this conversation, we had a chat, and you mentioned about what not to put in the bin.
Yeah.
So can you explain a little bit more about what we shouldn't be putting in the bin and why we should be putting it in the bin?
Yes. So I think there is like a misconception, like people think recycle bin, cool, I'm going to put like my old socks, my underwear, which is like the most common thing that tends to break over time anyway. And they're like, cool, that's the recycling bin. So it makes sense to just put that for recycling. So, you know, but the reality is it's not a textile recycling bin. So what would be recycled would be like cardboard, plastics and things like that, but not textile. So textile would be separated from this thing and would be chucked with like general waste, which then end up in landfill. Obviously, like if you have anything that's like natural fibers, so 100% cotton, linen, and things like that, it tends to biodegrade much quicker. But if we can avoid to just put anything in the bin, that would be anything in landfill would be amazing. So I think this is where like the massive misconception is like people think, oh, I'm just going to put that in my recycling bin and then it's going to go to recycling, but it's not true. So really, I would really push people to be like, please, 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 don't do any of this. Be on the lookout for any recyclers or, once again, donation bank, but do not put that in the bin because it's just a massive misconception. And on that note, I personally think as well that the government or the local council are also responsible for that. I think textile, you know, recycling bins should be readily available anywhere in the UK. It should be like a normal... It's normal, we have been educated now to like recycle at home, and it's now become a normal thing over the past few years, which wasn't like back in the 80s, you know? So now everyone knows it's the right things to do, but nothing is done around textile recycling. So I think the government should be putting in place textile, like recycling textile bin, to make it like easier for people to access, and so, and have also campaign around like awareness and like, we're seeing like on TV all these like landfill full of clothes, but then if some solution were put down, you know, in the first place and make it easy for people to do, then we won't have that problem. That makes sense? Or it would be one of the solutions.
Is there a thing in place whereby like fashion companies or fast fashion where they can donate their dead stock or recycle their dead stock effectively and efficiently?
So that's a big question. I think the first issue, so yes, technically like any company could be like, okay, cool, I'm gonna just, I've got a lot of dead stock, I don't know what to do with it, I'm just gonna give it to TK Maxx. TK Maxx is gonna they're gonna buy in bulk, they're gonna resell it, great, keeps in circulation. Loads of brands will be like, okay, well, we don't want that dead stock, we can't sell it, so I'm just gonna send it to like recycling. This is where we disagree with that. Anything that don't need to be recycled should not be put in recycling. like, this is wrong. You're producing something that takes resources to then sending it back, like, and having destroyed, like, that's not okay. I think for me, the massive thing that needs to change is not coming up with a solution for this brand on what to do with the dead stock. It's for the brand to actually reduce their impact by producing 10 times less. That's what they are doing. Back in the days, once again, like, companies are like fast fashion. We're not creating as many collections, as much clothes. Like, yeah, I think before it used to be like 4 times a year, you know, like all the season, and they have a new collection. Now it's like 30 different collections coming out in 1 year. So the issue is not like, should we find a solution for this brand? I actually think, no, we should, they should be, you know, are the ones stopping overproducing, because they are the reason why the pile of clothes ending up in landfill is just keeping on growing and growing and growing. And great to have this solution in place, because it does exist. There is not that many. There is us. but it needs to come with also them to rethink the way they are pushing people to buy new all the time. Because then, you know, it's going to be like a slippery slope. They're just going to be like, oh, we've got a solution for recycling. So then that's fine then. We can just keep on like overproducing, because then we have someone to keep this clothes in circulation. But that's not helping stopping the problem, is it?
Yeah, no, it's just everything you're saying is so interesting. It's like there is no education around textile recycling. We talk about weather and climate all the time. I didn't know any of that. I knew none of that.
Yeah.
And the one thing I took away actually from last year's summit was if I buy something new, mm-hmm. I look at their sustainability, and if it's made in the UK,
yeah.
And if it's not, I won't buy it. I'm trying to think of some
Rapanui. It's actually a Spanish brand, Rapanui. Yeah.
Is it?
Yes, it's Spanish, but that's a good circular fashion model.
So I bought a T-shirt from them. That's the one new thing that I had bought in the last year was that T-shirt, and I bought it because they have a circular brand. You can send your stuff back to them and everything. We need to get you talking to somebody in government, because it's, you know, we're not like trying to finger point. You're trying to educate and like saying
education.
Like this is what this problem looks like. But I do agree with the fast fashion brands. I really do.
Yeah, what can we do? I think
I think there is that,
but there is also, once again, I'm gonna have to go back to the government. They have to put in place taxes to like stop these businesses from overproducing. And I think, for instance, France, not that I want to say my country is doing it better, but they've just recently, for instance, Shein, being like one of the worst fast fashion brands that exists on earth. In France, for instance, they have just put a tax to the brand themselves for overproducing and to the consumer for overbuying. So then it just stops people from like purchasing, like, you know, like, it's so cheap. So they were like, oh, well, I'm just going to buy 10 of this T-shirt and then return the rest. But like all these returns are never put back in circulation, most likely to end up in landfill, because they don't have the means to like clinic repackaging from like a health and safety perspective. These clothes are just discarded straight away. Exactly. So then this is where, as Riskin, as a company anyway, this is where we come in place for these businesses to like, not for Shein, I'm talking like local businesses, etc. We just... Yeah, we'd have never worked with anything with Shein.
I never thought about that.
If you buy anything, even from Zara or anywhere like that, if you buy like, you know, 2 trousers in 3 different sizes, you keep one, the rest is never going to be put back onto the shelf. That will be like, cool, well, it's been worn. We can't put it back into circulation.
I feel like I can't believe I don't know that. I didn't know
so
that.
So then this is why the brands are dealing with a massive issue with like customer return, because they're like, we don't have the capacity nor the resources nor the money to spend on cleaning, you know, repackaging it, repairing it, or and putting it back onto the shelf. So this is why we come in place to help the brand, being like, just give that to us and we'll deal with it. We'll repair it, we'll just clean it, like we'll just like put it back into resale for you, because we have the, this is what we do as a business, and like, just, these are perfectly fine clothes. So yeah,
fascinating. Thank you so much for
You're
talking
so
to us. That's a massive take home for me today.
Yeah.
That's a big one. No, I'm shoes as well. I'm gonna actually seek out the textile. I'd rather that because I don't always have time to sell things. So I buy off Vinted. I don't always have time to sell stuff, but that's where it'll be going.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's but really
most people
amazing.
Like, yeah, for clothes or shoes that have reached the end of life, yeah. They can be reused or like put back into circulation. Do that as a first, because obviously recycling takes resources and energy. So only the last resort, but if it needs recycling, yeah, definitely. Please do the right thing.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time today.
You're so
Thank
welcome.
You.
Thanks. No worries. Thank you so much.
We hope you've enjoyed these little mini podcasts from the Blue Earth Summit at Woolwich. We've had a great time, learned loads, got to speak to many cool people. Thanks to everybody who talked to us. And most importantly, thanks very much for listening to the podcast and supporting us.
We hope you leave this episode
loving the weather, but a little bit more.